Here we go.
21 gigawatts!
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
I fight for the users.
The CPU is a neural net processor, a learning computer.
Welcome, everybody, to Tech to You Tuesdays. Today's kind of a big day if you're listening on the actual day, Tuesday, May 7th. Of course, we do pre-record this the day before, a little nugget of information there. But
it's 'cause I'm here.
Apple has Brian's here today. So Apple actually has an event going on Tuesday, May 7th in the morning. But I was considering like doing a whole segment on it, but it looks like it's just kind of like a little mini iPad event. So if you want news on that, I'll probably touch on it next week, but I don't expect a whole lot to come from that particular event.
There's talks they might bring up AI a little bit. So
yeah, I am really interested to see if Siri can actually become intelligent. Like, I have HomePods through my house. It's like my choice of home audio, playing music and sending requests like add this to my grocery list or whatever.
Right.
And like 50% of the time it's like, who's speaking? And I can't fix it. Like, I can't figure it out. I've done so many different, like I've had it re-record my voice, re-recognize me. And I think I finally kind of isolated it to, if there's any level of background noise in my kitchen, that one is the one that doesn't work. But if I'm like in my bedroom or in any other part of the house where I have a speaker, those all work fine. So yes, even us technicians have
HomePods don't have that problem. My Google ones, you should try some
yeah, Google, yeah. You mean those devices. Ones that what did that do in the middle of the night?
It played a Spotify premium ad really loud at 2 a.m.
Yeah. What was that about? Not having those in your house ever again?
Hey, that one's here in the office.
Yeah. So. Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. One of my best stories about that was I don't remember if I was gaming with you or not, but I was playing a game. We were in the middle of something. We were talking obviously in the game on Discord, and all of a sudden one of my, I think at the time I was using Alexa devices. And it was like, the definition of murder is, and I was like, guys, hold on a second. And I like took off my headset and I'm like listening to this. Did it just say the definition of murder? I did not prompt it. And I went back. This is back when we were recording all of our games too. So I went back to what I said, and I never said anything that could be like, tell me the definition of murder. So, you know, sometimes your devices just might get,
possessed,
haunted. I don't know. So, got a few, unique, kind of different topics to go over today. One of the first ones I wanted to go over, I've got a couple of like grocery store technology topics, which is a little different for us, but I thought they were kind of interesting and a lot of implications of what these could do for us as, you know, just people that go around the world and do things. Well, even just going to the store. Sam's Club is automating their checkout process. Now, it's not really particularly technologically newsworthy, but there's some components to it which are really interesting to me that I wanted to go over. So the very basic idea here is that they're using an app where you walk through Sam's Club and you have an app on your phone and you scan the QR code of the items that you want to purchase, mm-hmm. and you put them in your cart. And really straightforward. It's kind of like a no-brainer almost of an easy way to track everything that you're putting in your cart. You, as you're walking out of the store, pay for it and you leave and you don't go to a checkout aisle. So assuming you have a smartphone with a camera and you can put this app on it, it should speed up the process for you a bit. So the actual process is you go in, you have this app that you've logged in with your Sam's Club account. You put in your billing information in the account. You go in and you buy your laundry detergent, your whatever, and then you throw it in your cart. After you've scanned it, you go to pay. As you're walking out, you pay in the app, and as soon as you pay, it creates a QR code on your screen. As you're walking out of the store, you point the QR code at an actual person. They scan it with a different tool, and then they just kind of like look at their thing. Okay, you bought this, this, and this, and then they quickly look at your cart just to make sure it looks like everything is there, and then you're on your way.
So what they already do with receipt checking?
What they already do with receipt checking, but you just don't need a person to scan all your items. So you cut that time out. So imagine you go to Costco. I mean, I don't personally go to Sam's Club. Nothing against Sam's Club. But when I go to Costco, which is rare now because I can do same day delivery with Costco using Instacart. So, but when I have had to go to Costco, yeah, like I probably a quarter to maybe 10, 20% of the time that I'm there is just waiting in line. So cool technology, simple concept. They say that, I believe that their Sam's Club's estimate was it cuts the entire visit down by 25% for a lot of people in the most extreme conditions. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's kind of a cool feature. And the thing that I liked about this was this happened at almost the same time that Amazon has basically admitted something pretty funny about AI. So
Just walk out.
Yeah. So just to go back real quick to this Sam's Club thing. There is a little AI involvement here. And basically all it's doing is looking for anomalies, unusual activity in your purchasing. Like if you're buying things that don't really make sense, but they also know like where expensive items are physically located in the store. And if you're like going down aisles and picking things up that aren't related to the items that you're purchasing, you know, they're using very minimal amounts of AI to look for kind of unusual.
Sir, you bought a $3,000 computer, a 2-gallon special Member's Mark bottle of vodka and socks. Come talk
yeah,
to us.
Yeah, real quick. Yeah. I mean, that sounds like what I bought last week. So not that weird, but I think that the minimal levels of AI are just really there to kind of help protect the business for unusual stuff. And I'm sure it'll work well. But Amazon had these stores that claimed to use heavy levels of artificial intelligence where you could walk into the store,
pick up an item, put it in your cart, and just leave.
Yeah, right. And just walk out. And they know who you are. And they scan your, or they charge your card when you're walking out of the door. And it uses AI. Which, as you know,
I don't think that any of their employees were named AI.
Well, I think in their case, AI stands for actually Indians. So it was a bunch of people in an Indian farm.
Yeah, it was like basically 1,000 people
that lived in India that were just watching cameras and filling everything in because their AI didn't work.
Yeah.
And obviously, that's expensive to pay a bunch of people. To watch cameras. I mean, it'd probably be cheaper just to have checkers at a checkout aisle.
It's funny how there was no adoption or real talk about this feature for years after they introduced it. And then the first time it came back up, it was like, yeah, we're canceling this.
We're getting rid of it and closing the stores. So there was one, if you're in the Sacramento area, there was one that was in the Elk Grove area, kind of South Sacramento. And it has since closed, to the public at least. I don't know if it's still available for Amazon Fresh orders where Amazon employees can go in and grab items. I wasn't clear on that. The store is still there, and it looked like there was activity when I was there a couple of weeks ago. But yeah, they've announced that they're basically closing these locations, and their whole, like, you don't have to check out, everything is automated, didn't really work very well. So I bring that up to say I'm pleased to see that Sam's Club is taking a bit more of a step-by-step approach to how to integrate AI into their store in a less impactful way. Whereas Amazon was trying to just flip the script overnight. Now we have a store who's actually going to do something, test it out and see, you know, we're going to know in a couple of months what people's thoughts are. Does this work well? Will Sam's Club improve membership counts because of this? So people who go to both Costco and Sam's Club, if all of a sudden they're canceling Costco memberships because they find it so convenient to go to a store who's using artificial intelligence to help guide the simplicity of people's daily lives, that's going to be a big deal. I mean, we already knew that AI is going to be very impactful, but it's good. And I think this is something that has not only been said by me, but has been said by many experts that are in the AI field, and also just people, you know, kind of like us who are watching it. It's going to change a lot, and it's very challenging to predict what it will change. Yeah. Like, one of the biggest things I think about AI is, even still, we struggle to understand what those implications really, truly are. Last week, we talked about how a principal of a school was suspended from his job because an employee who didn't like him used artificial intelligence to copy his voice and then make him
make a recording of him that wasn't him.
It wasn't him. A bunch of racist slurs and so the guy lost his job or was suspended over it. And eventually it actually got to the point where the FBI got involved and identified who was at fault. And of course, the principal is getting his job back. He's going to be starting next school year. He's going to be back, putting back to his position. And I'm sure the school's going to make amends with him. But we're seeing, like, this is the guy who did this, who generated this. He's kind of a techie-ish guy from what we understand, but not, he's the athletics director. And he's by no means a technician. He's not somebody who I would say is qualified as myself and how these tools work.
That's the part that I hate the most about the mass adoption of AI, is where we get to the level of the equivalent of, for lack of a better word, like script kiddies, people who have no real foundational understanding of programming, of what they're doing, and they're just going and finding these scripts to do what they want, oftentimes for malicious means, but also doing so very poorly, or executing it very poorly. And they're going to do the same thing with these AI tools that you can get that are dime a dozen, that you personalize in your own way, or that you use for whatever you want, and they're not going to have a fundamental understanding of what they're doing. Hopefully they're going to get caught if they're doing something malicious, but we're going to see.
Like, there, I don't remember if I touched on it last week, but there's a bunch of apps that got stripped from the App Store and Google Play Store that were taking, that you could use to take a picture of someone and remove their clothing. But kids in high school had it. Not cool. So, you know, if I was in high school, I'd be like, oh, wow, look at this thing. And, you know, like these innocent 14 and 15-year-olds using their, innocent-ish. But, I mean, you can obviously use it for something incredibly malicious that it probably wasn't quite intended for. I mean, I'm sure that the creators knew that that could happen. But you can see the concerns. And so, yeah, people are using these AI tools to do things maybe they shouldn't. One other thing that grocery store related, and then we'll close that out. In Germany, there is a software that is available that you can install at your grocery store that scans the faces of your patrons to determine the likelihood of them being of drinking age, which, now that I just thought about this, I really should have looked this up. I think it's 18 in like a lot of Europe instead of 21 in the United States, but whatever the drinking age is, basically they use this AI tool to scan your face and identify the likelihood of you being of age to drink. And if it's not sure, the person checks ID, but apparently it is expediting the process of checkouts because people have to take a moment to get their ID out and show them, and then they type it in. And if this AI tool can basically do it for you, great. But the thing I love about this is, a couple months back, we had a segment where we talked about this AI tool that the military brought together, and they basically told a bunch of Marines, if you can sneak up to the camera where this AI tool is, then you know, win or whatever. Right. So a dude put a cardboard box over himself and walked right up to the camera to fool the AI. It was just something that they hadn't really considered could be done.
Right.
So are like 17-year-olds
buy a fake mustache at a costume shop?
Yeah, you know, the fake mustache with the glasses and the big nose.
The big nose.
Yeah, like they just put that on, and it's like, oh yeah, that person's definitely 40.
Give that man a bottle of
everything. Give him his. What do they drink in Germany?
Beer.
Well, I guess I was thinking hard liquor. Yeah, I mean, give him his stout. I don't know. Now I sound foolish for anybody who's like, that's not what Germans drink. So the thing I wanted to really highlight with this is, this is the first time that I've heard a business, you know, anywhere in the world have what they think is a great reason to scan your face in public using an AI tool for your benefit. Hopefully,
yeah,
it turns out to be good for everybody. Welcome back to Tech to You Tuesdays. I've got Ryan here with me today. We've been talking about AI grocery stores. AI in grocery stores, I guess, is maybe a better way to put that. Yeah. And
AI checking you out.
The thing I left off on was Germany's, you know, the first country that I'm aware of that's basically got software in grocery stores where they're telling people, this is an AI tool, which is good for you. It's going to kind of like, we're going to scan your face for your benefit to expedite the checkout process. And I think that there's definitely going to be people who are like, oh, cool. And there's going to be people who are like, oh, that sounds interesting. And then there's going to be people like, do not, I'm not cool with you scanning my face. And I'm kind of curious how that part's going to work, which is like, what if you're not cool with that? Do you just like have to walk in wearing a mask?
Or just acknowledge that you can't use their service?
I don't know.
Or request it? I don't know.
We're going to get to a point where businesses are like, well,
the real question is, sorry. Do they save that data? Are they storing your face?
Right. And we don't know.
Are they just using it to verify your age and then never storing that? Fine. Whatever.
Yeah. I mean, If they're not storing it and they're just doing a quick analysis and deleting it, that's definitely not
the best way.
Bad. Yeah, I mean, it's the best way to do what they're doing. But I still, yeah.
You could just have your ID out and ready when you know you're purchasing alcohol. It's really not a hard concept.
Like Face ID is what I use to unlock my phone. And giving my face, even if it's just a single still image, to an AI tool, it's not hard to make a 3D map of my face based off of a even just a single picture. Right. And now you can unlock my phone. Technically, I mean, it'd be some work, but technically it could be done. I guess, that is a good reason to say that probably Face ID isn't going to be the most secure way to unlock our devices right. in the near future. So speaking of Europe, the UK, who is constantly in European Union, England, they're frequently ahead of us when it comes to protecting their
consumers
from
privacy.
Yeah, companies who are screwing up or
antitrust.
Yeah,
really all the cool things.
Like anybody who bought a USB or sorry, an iPhone 15, which currently has USB-C. I'm sure that if you're an iPhone user for a long time, you're like, oh, why'd they have to change it again? They changed it just recently from the big flat one. That was like 10 years ago. This is a benefit that they went to USB-C. Like most devices that you can purchase now have a USB-C connection. And you can thank the European Union for basically forcing Apple to make that change, which is, if you care, actually better for the environment, because now we don't have to keep throwing away cables. And hopefully the USB-C standard lasts long enough that, we could use it for the next decade.
Yeah.
I think that that's very realistic. It's a great connection. And I'm sure another standard will evolve at some point, probably more wireless at some point.
I do not miss having a different charging cable for every single new phone I bought.
Oh, man. Yeah. Like, I mean, so having, I think, if I'm not mistaken, every single thing that I own as a consumer electronic uses USB-C. AirPods Pro, my Bose headsets, my laptop, my iPad, my phone. Those are I think everything I charge. That's all my main stuff, and it's all USB-C, so I love that. Anyway, going back to the UK. So I have talked quite a bit about how people should use two separate networks in their home. So when you have Wi-Fi, you have a Wi-Fi network for yourself and all your high security devices, like computers, for example. And then you have a guest network. And the easiest thing to do there is just think like, your nephew's coming over with his own laptop. Like God knows what's on this thing. I'm going to put him on his own network so he doesn't infect my computers over the network. That's one good reason in and of itself. The other really big reason is if you're using any IoT devices, IoT being Internet of Things. Internet of Things devices are cameras and
thermostats,
sensors, and all of the little things.
Most appliances now.
Yeah, like there's so many little things that you can have. Like my network has currently somewhere between 60 and 70 devices connected to Wi-Fi. It's a lot. But that's like every one of my light switches. I swapped out each one of the light switches has its own Wi-Fi connection. I probably have 40 or 50 wireless lights, but those all connect to a hub of their own. And so that's one device kind of on my network. And then I've got my upstairs and downstairs vacuums connected to Wi-Fi, my washer, dryer, my TV, my refrigerator all connect to Wi-Fi. I've talked about not connecting TVs to Wi-Fi. I have a separate network for that. There was a thing that we talked about in a recent show about security for certain TVs. I've been patching my stuff just to try to keep it safe, but it doesn't matter that much because it is on an isolated and highly protected network. How do I do this? Well, the basic idea is you just turn on a guest network, and then whenever you want to connect something like your new doorbell or your new cheap camera that you got on Amazon or your thermostat or whatever, you just connect it to the other wireless network, the guest wireless network. Sometimes you can have issues if the network is a bit too restrictive or how the device works. There can be problems with having it on a guest network, but generally it works just fine. And it creates a great layer of security because the guest network inherently cannot communicate with your primary network. So if somebody sits in front of your house, finds a vulnerability on your thermostat, connects to your network, and then watches your traffic, that was very avoidable because you could have just connected your thermostat to your guest network, in which case they're watching what temperature you change your house to. and it, realistically, they probably can't even do that. But at least they can't have access to where your computers are, right, which is the main idea. So the UK is very well aware of how low security IoT devices typically are, and they're going to force a couple of changes. One of them is that they're banning simple to guess passwords on IoT devices sold in the UK. So a great example of that would be
password.
Yeah, well, yeah, password as a password. But there are many products that you can purchase, cheap cameras like nanny cam type cameras. You buy them on Amazon. They're from a brand you've never heard of before. They're $40. And then they come with a default password of like Wi-Fi 1234.
And you can probably look it up online. It works for every device.
Right. In fact, many of the routers that we have sold for decades have had the password as admin. And it wasn't because we liked that. That's how they came out of the box from some of the biggest manufacturers on the planet. There's companies that we've used for years, Linksys before they were bought by Cisco. TP-Link is a common one now. There's plenty of like well-known name brand routers, Asus, and most of these routers come with the username admin and the password 60 or something like that. And yeah, you like you said, you can just Google it. So if you even have a clue of what somebody's router is, you can get into their administrative setup. So they're preventing that. And basically what that means is that when you buy an IoT device, it'll probably come with a little slip of paper that says your password is this. So they're not making the same default password for everybody. Right. It can be a little cumbersome if you like forget stuff and you lose that piece of paper, but in theory, it's better for your protection. And then another one is that they must disclose policies for security flaws. So like, let's say, for example, you bought a low security camera from a company. Now they're required to notify you, hey, there was a breach, or there is a known flaw in the way that our system works and we haven't updated it. So just informing users of like, hey, just a heads up, there is a problem. You might not be aware of it. It might not even affect you, but this exists. That would be great. There's so many times that we've talked about on the show data breaches where we didn't even get an email about it. Right. And we were affected by the breach. Another one is to predefine how long products will receive security updates.
That's big. That is specifically something I really like about Pixel's product lines, is that each new Pixel phone has 7 years of support. It's defined. It's there. They're not going to go back on it. If you buy a Pixel phone, the model year that it came out, it is going to be supported for 7 years.
And in theory, other than maybe needing to replace the battery over a 7 year period,
screen
a couple of times, screen if you break it. That means that you can have a phone that should last you 7 years. And at this point, the processors that and amount of memory that they put into phones,
they're little laptops.
They'll last you. I mean, there's people that work here with 5-6 year old phones because they are fine.
Yeah.
They're getting the job done. So I think the better that these devices get, and the more we're forcing companies to provide support for them so that we're not forced to buy new ones every 2 years, the better.
Or Oregon, on the opposite side of it, to protect a consumer. If you have no intention of supporting this product for a couple of years at least, I'm not going to buy it.
Right. If they say,
I don't want to buy something that I have to replace in a year because you stopped supporting it.
Yeah. If like, let's say you're walking around your local electronics store in, England, and they now have a little disclaimer that shows the amount of time that
I'm surprised you didn't say your local electronics store in somewhere like Dorkshire.
Here you are in Dorkshire.
Nerd.
Buying your nerdy equipment. Oh God, that's self-deprecating in a bad way. At least I'm not British.
At least.
So, predefine how long devices get security updates. That's great because, how often all of us have bought something. I had just bought this 6 months ago and it already doesn't work and I can't get an update and they don't support it. So that'll be kind of nice to see. They must have an option to securely update software. That to me is probably the most important of all of these. Like, yeah, they do need to provide updates. That's kind of a critical component, but there are so many devices that you can buy, again, doorbells and thermostats, and if you're ever unsure of like, I don't know if I should buy this, it's not hard to research these things. Like, is this a secure brand?
These don't even have to be for cheap products either. You want to be able to update them because a zero day can happen on any device.
That's probably the reason why I say this is the biggest thing is that, like, let's say, for example, you buy a Nest thermostat. Well, Nest is owned by Google. Nest is one of the most popular thermostat makers for smart thermostats. But Google leases out their software to tens of thousands of different devices and hundreds, if not thousands, of companies. And they basically say, this is our foundation software that you can install on your device. And it will run your code, you know? So like, there's a company called Rabbit, which recently made the R1. It's like this little AI handheld thing. You can Google it. It sucks. It's not worth it. I hate to be that guy, but it does suck. It's not worth it.
It's really unanimous right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's basically a device that runs an Android app. That's effectively what it is. Now let's just say that Google, as a whole, who's making the software, identifies a flaw in their code, which has now been put on tens of thousands of different devices because all these different companies use that code. They need to be able to mass push an update, especially if it's a zero-day vulnerability, meaning that some bad actor identified a flaw in code that gave them access to it. This is what just recently happened with the TVs we talked about a couple weeks ago. And if that occurs, we need a way to actually update our devices and protect ourselves, keeping automatic updates turned on for your own protection so somebody can't gain access to it.
These devices not getting updated are how we end up with botnets that are hundreds of thousands of devices large every other year.
When you hear about like, this game went down, this Amazon site went down, Apple went down. Attack. Yeah, these are attacks that usually happen because a single person in many cases has gotten control of hundreds of thousands of devices and then can just spam one place with all these hundreds of thousands of devices. So that's kind of an idea of like what a botnet might do. So you could unknowingly be participating in an attack. You can unknowingly be mining Bitcoin on your devices. Like your stuff just runs really, really, really slow. And then you have tech to you log in remotely and we identify you've been mining Bitcoin for the last 6 months for some guy.
And he didn't even get any of it.
And he didn't even get any money out of it. Yeah. So, making sure that, you know, these devices are secure is something I really love. The reason why I think this is a relevant topic is a reminder of the high level of vulnerability that exists in many cheaper IoT devices. If you're buying devices from companies that are well-known brands, usually, not in all cases, but in most cases, you're buying something from Google or Amazon or Apple, chances are it's going to have regular security updates and generally good security. But if you're buying something from a company you've never heard of before, could be hit or miss.
Right.
So being, you know, knowing that it has the ability to get it updated is big.
And you can tell it's a realistic threat because the EU is doing something about it.
Right. In fact, that leads me to my last bullet point of this topic, which is that the UK is the only place where this is being...
So not even the whole EU then, just the UK.
Yeah, UK. Well, good for them. And in the US requires absolutely none of this juicy goodness. No. So hopefully, you know, there was the White House had a... I forget, we talked about it recently, but there was some... foundations laid out of what the White House would like to see happen with AI when it comes to government use of AI. So they're beginning to discuss regulations. One of them was, for example, if the White House or the government or any branch of the government uses AI for something that affects people, which is everything that they do, they have to disclose the use of it and what it's being used for. Now, I'm sure that probably doesn't apply to the military, but when it comes to like using it for what do they call that? Data when they figure out like how many people are living in a census. There it is, census data. Yeah. So when they're trying to use it for census data or better accuracy on weather reporting or whatever it is, I'm sure that's where we're going to see really those disclosures is like, we used AI for a component of this and here's how and here's where we got it from. And at least that's a step in the right direction.
Your weather was AI generated.
Please
don't kill your local weatherman.
We seeded your clouds to rain based off of AI generated data. Oh man, that'll be cool. I was actually just watching a thing about how I think it's sodium nitrate gets flared into clouds to create like basically to make it rain easier. So these guys like literally fly a plane into the clouds and then shoot a flare off that releases a chemical that makes it easier for it to rain. But we can launch these from the ground too. Mm-hmm. Like that's a feature. And then so like we just have a bunch of pods on the ground all over desert areas. And when the AI says it's smart to launch these flares because the clouds have met the right conditions to create rain, then the AI launches a bunch of flares into the sky to make it rain. And now we have AI controlled weather.
If you think that's cool, wait till you hear about the giant horns people used to use to get rid of thunderstorms.
Used to. How do you think I made it rain just a couple days ago? So, yeah, anyway, that there's, God, there's so much speculation. This is why I say, like, we can't even begin to predict the amount of influence AI will have.
Somebody's listening going, write that down.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. So this is kind of one of the main things I wanted to talk about this week, shifting gears a bit. There's a scam that was going on, and I'm sure it still is. All good scams, good meaning they were effective, all good scams typically get copied. You know, that once somebody realizes, like, ooh, yeah, I can make money on that too, they're going to do it. So recently there were 16 people arrested in the Dominican Republic after being caught impersonating the children or relatives of elderly people. One of the things that I have not promoted a whole lot, but I have become a bigger fan of, is doing your best to remove yourself from the internet when it comes to, like, where you live, what your phone number is. I didn't care too much about it until I realized that a lot of these scams are driven by that data.
Yeah.
So let's say, for example, I do searching on Ryan Beck. It probably wouldn't be all that hard for me to figure out your parents' names and where they live, maybe who their parents are or were, and just going through this list of establishing some baseline of who your relatives are. And then maybe I can find you on LinkedIn and I know where you work, so I get some basic information about you. And because Grandma doesn't necessarily care about her online privacy or even know that her data is out there, I call Ryan's relative or
last known phone number.
Yeah. I mean, if anybody's grandparents are still around for, you know, those of us in our 30s, but I mean, even going to a teenager, not mine either. Let's say we go to like a teenager who has their grandparents around, and the teenager is old enough to be making calls, 17, 18, whatever. And they post videos on the internet, on the line,
on
is what
the
I was
line.
About to say.
You are old.
On the line. Yeah, so they post some videos on the TikToks and the Instagrams. And now we have their voice. And we know where they go to school. And we know who their parents are and where they live and where they grew up, because this information is readily available on websites like peoplefinder.com and other well-known sites to find people's information for free. And then, so I've cloned your voice, and now I call your grandma using your voice, and I tell her I need money. And I'm scared because there's people who are threatening me, and I don't have time to get off the phone so you can call my parents. I really need it right now. And this is what's happening.
Yeah.
And the only thing I can really say to be protective is keep a close eye on caller ID. That can be spoofed, but it is one of the hardest things. So if grandma doesn't have caller ID, like, show her that it should say this person's name when they call. That's a good step one, is if you don't recognize it, you kind of can't trust what's happening. Another one is I just feel so ridiculous saying this, but an actual safe word between your family and you that you discuss in person. If I say pickle, I'm fine. It's me. You know,
yeah.
I don't know why pickle is the word that popped in my head. Is that revealing of me on some?
Mine's marshmallow.
Deep psychological level. At least we both have food items. Mine is a little bit less the shape that I would hope that I would have thought about right away. But yeah, you know.
I'm diabetic, so sugar.
Marshmallow. So is your keyword really marshmallow?
It
because
is.
You just revealed to the public. Now you have to find a new keyword.
Oh, no, only it's yeah. No.
Your PIN number is 1234, Grandma. Now we got to change it again.
Yeah.
So yeah, this grandparent scam, a couple things. So again, caller ID is one, an actual family word of some kind can be beneficial. But most importantly, you kind of just have to be aware that who's calling you might not be who you think it is. And, there is a bulletproof way to fix this. The only way this wouldn't be bulletproof is if you have got some CIA genius hacking you or something like this, the level that is not likely to ever happen. At least not with today's technology, is if you're not sure, hang up and call them back.
Yeah.
And the whole thing about, like, oh, I can't hang up the phone because I'm in trouble. And if I hang up, then you won't be able to call me back. God, I hate to, like,
just painting urgency.
You know, the thing is, like, could that really happen? Could there be a real instance where a person is in trouble and can't actually? That's scary because now you don't know if you're being scammed. So that's kind of where that, like, safe word thing comes in. So yeah, Ian, what can we do to protect ourselves? Be aware, you know, and like I think the only thing I can even come up with that's kind of like the good end all is that private you know, phrase, word, whatever that reveals that you're actually you. And you know, the vast majority of people listening to this are not going to be a target of this kind of thing. It's the people that you know, especially the elderly, that are going to be the targets of this type of scam. And they're not listening to this.
The problem is that this is one of the more effective types of scams that's been around for a while that most previously was Facebook messages or Instagram messages. You know, your account would get hacked and then they'd start messaging family members. But calling family members and trying to impersonate a grandchild is not new. People have been doing that for over a decade.
Yeah, but now they can do it with their voice.
And now AI is making it easier because you can give them samples of audio or worse, video to try to be more convincing. Imagine taking a FaceTime and you think you're actually talking to somebody because you can see and hear them.
Right, right. And actually, I think the last one that is really makes these very obvious that they're scams is the unusual methods of payment.
Yeah.
So like, grandma, I need you to go get a gift card from Target, or I need you to go to this website and purchase this product for me because that's going to get me out of this bind I'm in. Or I need you to put cash in a box or gold in a box and mail it.
I watched a documentary where they had somebody carve pages out of a book and put cash in there.
Whoa.
Because it would be harder to see or detect in a shipment.
Yeah, so, I mean, if grandma's getting put to work to take care of the grandchildren in that way, man, yeah, that's pretty obvious. Now, I you can all hear the how much easier it has become to create these scams, to facilitate them, to be anonymous. I mean, these 16 guys who got arrested in the Dominican Republic were doing this for a while, well over a year before they even got locked into, like people figured out where they were. It's not hard to hide yourself on the internet. It's not that complicated. Now, once somebody sort of is on to you, then it becomes a little bit easier. But for the average person, yeah, you're never going to know even what country these people were in.
That would have been a great segue to a NordVPN sponsor.
And now a segue to the sponsor we don't have. It'd be kind of fun to get some. Yeah, well, the reason why that's funny for anybody who doesn't know is like every single person.
Every online video podcast.
Yeah, tech news, gamers.
NordVPN.
Sponsored by NordVPN. And fine, yeah, NordVPN's fine, whatever. It's a fine VPN service and there's plenty of them available.
Pay us.
They just, they just pay a lot of money to sponsors, it seems. And for those that don't, what's VPN? We've talked about it before. It kind of just privatizes your location on the internet so people can't figure out where you are or what you're doing and routes you through a traffic source so your internet provider can't really monitor your activity. This is good for like, you know, if you just generally don't want them to know what you're Googling. Like, man, I was Googling symptoms of taking too much ibuprofen over the weekend. That's not exactly something I want my Comcast to know.
Abdominal pain.
I just want all my podcast listeners to know that I've had too much back pain. I had to take ibuprofen and was worried about the side effects. So, I mean, there's just, you know, you don't want necessarily your ISP knowing what you're doing and then selling you ads based off of that information. So
this man took too much ibuprofen. Give him Tylenol ads.
Yeah. Oh God. So when it comes to the scam thing, obviously there's a lot of scams that we've talked about over the years. Most of the scams that are sort of related to tech to you are the digital scams. I get a pop up and it said to call this number. And then after that, they kind of get tricked into thinking that there's problems with their computer that there isn't. One of the things that's really challenging for us as the computer repair industry, I think, has kind of fallen into what the automotive industry used to be or used to feel like in the 90s. Like, can I even trust these people? They're telling me I need more headlight fluid. Right. And if you don't know that headlight fluid doesn't exist, then you could easily get scammed. But the thing is, the bar, at least in California, came in, Bureau of Automotive Repair, and started setting some baselines. Like, you can't charge more than this for this. You can't, you know, if you lie to somebody about this, then we can take away your license to provide automotive repair. So they kind of came in and established some baselines of what you can and can't do. In our case, it's the Bureau of Electronics and Appliance Repair, which got a name change. Like, yeah, that. It used to be BEAR, and now I don't even remember what it is now. But anyway, there's a bureau that sort of observes what we do, too. But not to the extent that they should. Like, they really should be eyeballing businesses like ours a lot more to verify that the things that we are providing or quoting people are legitimate and are honest and they're not abusive. Right. Because it is very easy to abuse someone, hence the scams that exist in this industry. Having a trusted source is so critical. I mean, even if you just have one person in your family who's kind of the techie person, lean on them. Like, we don't mind answering a text message about like, hey, I got somebody on the phone who says I need to get Apple gift cards to fix my laptop. Should I do it? Like,
no,
just ask. We're going to tell you no. And obviously for anybody listening, you might think that I listen to Tech to You Tuesdays and Ian talks about all this different stuff. I got a really good idea of what scams are out there. The best I can tell you is I have scratched the surface of the scams that we see and that are out there. There's a lot of them. And I mean, the ones that hit us, that make us question sometimes, like, why is that real? Is this legitimate? Like, those are scary.
Dude, the ones that really scared me were the mortgage wire transfer ones.
Oh yeah, those or one of the ones we get hit with sometimes is people email one of the people in our accounting department to basically say, "Hey, I'm Ryan." You know, they send an email from quote unquote Ryan Beck.
Send me this and that document or and such data.
Yeah, hey, can you send me my W-4? I can't remember what my taxes were for last year. Can you change my bank account? Right, I got a new bank account. I want to just change my direct deposit. Yeah. So these hit us, Tech to You. We get these all the time. Now, we employ a tool on our email provider called Huntress, and there's a couple of other fancy, special, high security tools that we have, but Huntress is an example of like a higher level for business tool that monitors our email activity to look for unusual stuff. It does a better job of highlighting spam emails than like your traditional spam filter can. It also just looks for trends of unusual data on people's accounts. And we need this stuff. We have so many employees that thankfully all really know what they're doing. But anybody can be fooled. I mean, you just have to be in too much of a hurry. You could be had a bad day and you're off and you're not paying attention.
Have a bunch on your plate.
Protecting us from ourselves is a big part of what we recommend for people. So anyway, if you're ever unsure about these scams, you can see how wild they can get, especially on computers. I hope that we can appear to you as a voice of trust. And I recommend that you at minimum call us or somebody that you really do trust to say, you know, what should I do? I don't want to get scammed and I don't want my grandma to get scammed. And we're talk about more ways to not get scammed with, keeping your passwords up to date. We'll be right back about that. Well, I promised that when we came back, we were going to talk about passwords. And then I heard the song that I chose again. And I wanted to just put it out there that if you ever thought, like, I'm not that bad of a singer. Like, I sing in my car. And I was like singing One Headlight. That was the song by the Wallflowers it was just playing. And we have these microphones and we can hear what we're saying in our ears. Like, there's this immediate feedback so we can see if we're too far away from the mic or too, you know, close, whatever. And so the song was playing as I was clipping it. And I was like, started to sing it. And then the audio cut out from the song because I had hit pause, but I was still singing. So I, for the first time ever, heard my own voice through a microphone that picks up my vocal quality relatively well. And I was like, you know, I shouldn't sing in public.
I don't care for a lot of internet video trends, short form stuff. But there was one that was so good, and it was basically that. It was people would get a really good song on the radio. Their friend was really into it. It'd be up real loud. And then right before a part they knew their friend was going to belt out, they'd hit the mute, and it's just their friend singing to nothing in the background while they're recording, and their look was always just like a glare, just a death stare, like, how could you do me like this?
So anyway, yeah, you won't be hearing me. If it was in like, oh, man, I wonder if you'll ever sing. Nobody thought that, but... No. The answer is no.
The answer is no.
So we'll talk about passwords. May 2nd was World Password Day. There's a day for everything. There's World Pizza Day, World Burrito Day. Like, I could support those. World Password Day. You should be thinking about your passwords more frequently than once a year.
Who picks that?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, May 2nd. I mean, whatever.
It's just like, no, I'm busy that day. Let's do the 3rd.
So, yeah, I know, right? Yeah, so there's a couple of quick points I wanted to make about this. It's a good reminder. So passwords in general, there's a lot of misconception about passwords. Number one, the reason I recommend a password manager, why all of us here recommend a password manager, is because the most common way someone gets into your account is not because they guessed your password. It's because they have it, and it's because they got it from somewhere else. So you use the same password for Netflix that you do for your bank. Netflix gets breached, and then they attempt to use that password on your bank account. This is the reason why using the same password in any more than one location is a bad idea.
Even worse if they get a hold of your email password, because then they don't even have to guess what other accounts you have.
Right. Now, so I before this segment, last week I was kind of talking about this, and I was curious, you know, what amount of passwords does the average person have? Well, my parents just bought a new house and I was helping them set up their network. We were setting up their thermostat and their Amazon devices and their TV. I probably set up, 10 new accounts while I was there, approximately, something like that. I had to just completely set up from scratch, plus the other maybe 10 or so that they had. And this is just setting up their home stuff for like Wi-Fi. They don't even have that complicated of a network. I mean, it's what most people have at this point. And I was thinking to myself, like, man, my mom's password management thing is just killing me. You know, she's just one of the people who refuses to take the deep dive into something like LastPass to manage. And I'm not selling LastPass. Buy whatever password manager you want, just get a password manager and then use different passwords for different things. So again, that main reason for that is because using the same one in more than one place is the easiest way to have your stuff broken into. The common misconception is they have to be really long and complicated. It's good that they're really long and complicated. Most of mine are 20 digits plus alphanumeric with symbols, and I don't know what any of them are. They're totally randomized. I couldn't log into any of my accounts if I lost my password manager, which is fine because I know the access to my primary email account. I can call the company who hosts my primary email and get back into that if I had to. Anything could be reset if I lost it, but that would be a hassle. The point is that if you have a password that's even 10 characters, that's going to take years for anything to break. Even if the 10 characters are literally just numbers, which is the lowest form of security, because every digit is only potentially 10 values, 0 through 9. So it's easy to crack 0 through 9. But if you do that 10 times, that's years of time to crack this password. Right. Once you start throwing in letters, now we're talking decades, you know, and then you start throwing in symbols or you make it 12 characters, thousands of years to crack with current technology. But I would recommend just use different, like if you're not going to use a password manager, which I don't even want to give alternatives. I want you to use a password manager, but if you're not going to, use phrases. Pick like one of the things I saw somebody do a long time ago was they were a very avid reader and they would pick like the first sentence out of every book that they like. And then they would have like they would have the word Netflix written in like, I don't know, 1984 by George Orwell. I think that's who wrote that. And then like Netflix would be in the book. And then the first like four words of the book were their password. Hmm. And like, nobody would know that, but their library, their bookshelf was their password. And a lot of people have different things like hobbies and stuff that you could do this with. But the nice thing about that is you at least have a long enough and unique password for this thing that you can remember it. You can go to a place to find it. Nobody else would have a clue what that is. So, there's other ways to do it. Now, there's a book that for anybody who's like, oh man, I love this password and security and breaches and ransomware and how this all works. And I'm super interested in it. There's a book by Dan Brown. He's the guy who wrote Angels and Demons and the Da Vinci Code, both of which Ryan has definitely never seen because Ryan doesn't watch movies. No. unless it's Step Brothers or... Dan Brown wrote a book called Digital Fortress. And it's basically about like this encryption that cannot be broken under any circumstances, like the highest security thing ever. And the implications for the US government are concerning because they de-encrypt data captured by terrorist organizations. And it's not overly complicated depending on the encryption methods that they use. So it presents this really big threat to the world if there's this encryption method that can't be broken. That's the story. Not to say that that's reality. But anyway, it's kind of a cool book if you're into that kind of thing. It's one of the things that kind of got me into like digital security in a larger degree. I know. I live in Dorkshire, England. So, it took me a second. the other thing about this too is that all of the things I'm talking about when I say using these highly complex passwords or just a little bit more length or unique passwords, this all relies on brute forcing, which is just like guessing every single possible combination of letters and numbers until you get to the right password. That this relies on brute forcing being a means that's just ineffective. It would take, right, like my computer sitting here doing all this recording would take years, decades, thousands of years, millennia to figure out a password for.
Your example of 10 numbers taking several years, mm-hmm, was with a system several orders of magnitude more powerful than yours.
Right, right. Yeah, things that we do not have financial access to. Yeah. And the government does, you know. So I'm basing all of this off of today's technology. And if you're listening 100 years from now, which obviously people are, May 6th, 2124, by that time, there will be quantum PCs. And by that time, quantum computers will be things that everybody has in their house. Like, there's not much question. We're getting to that point. Quantum computing is a long topic, and it's one that would probably put a lot of people to sleep. But the basic idea is that its ability to calculate things is so significantly beyond what we know today, at least with our current technology, that it's almost unfathomable to predict how quickly it can process things that, like, right now would take years or thousands of years. So brute forcing passwords using a quantum computer becomes something that, like, a cell phone will be able to do in 50 years, if we use cell phones still, or however that works. But quantum computing is something that will change.
It's going to be a diamond implanted into your forehead.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a lot that definitely changes as we get to more powerful processors, because the day may come, and likely will come, assuming we don't have a meteor crash into us, or we don't blow ourselves up with nuclear winter, or
drown.
California falls off into the ocean. Anybody who gets the references that I just dropped, please email me, because that was
because I want to be friends.
Super,
I need friends.
Super specific reference that I just got that I just dropped. So anybody, assuming that we make it that far, there is a high probability that we will get to a point where it's going to be easier to guess your password using brute force rather than copying it or finding it or whatever. That's a scary future, you know, Terminator concept. But for now, use a password manager, use some basic, you know, logic in creating your passwords. Don't make it password 123.
Multi-factor authentication.
Use two-factor. Oh my God, I can't stress that enough. Please and thank you. That is the biggest thing. You'll get a text message at 2 a.m. that somebody from India tried to log into one of your accounts or some, you know, whatever place. Ah, I gotcha. You got stopped.
You stopped.
Now change your password after that just to be safe. But yeah, it's such a great way to, you feel vindicated, you know, like I did it.
Like, oh yeah, that was the right choice.
Yeah. And they didn't get into your stuff.
All those, the 100 times that I'm going to have to use this code myself are all now completely, like you said, vindicated,
right?
Because I've stopped somebody from gaining access.
I actually, at this point, if this has happened about 2 years ago, I started looking more for businesses online that offer services. Like, if there's many different people who offer a specific type of service, like password protection or password management, I would only look for the one that had two-factor available as a login. So, like buying web domains, you go to GoDaddy.com, you can buy your own website there. And for a long time, GoDaddy didn't have two-factor, but they've had it now for years. But there's still places you can buy a domain that don't have two-factor on their website, which means your domain, this thing that could be running your entire business, is kind of vulnerable.
Yeah.
And so that's an example of many different situations where I say, I won't even sign up for a service if they don't offer two-factor. So sign up for it when you can. One last little thing I wanted to hit on real quick, because this is just kind of good timing when we're talking about passwords. Over the weekend, Wichita, Kansas, never been to Kansas before. Apparently, Wichita is a pretty big city, 400,000 people, top 50 cities, largest cities in the United States. So it's not a small place. They got hit with a ransomware attack this weekend. And so city services like, these were the examples that were given. City services like paying your water bill and court citations are currently down. Is that a bad thing? Did somebody play Robin Hood?
I mean, the water bill is fine.
Yeah. I mean, assuming that they still But, you know, you still get water. But anyway, this was a ransomware attack, and news is just developing, but this is kind of an unusual situation where we actually are seeing whether it's a business or in this case a government entity, acknowledging publicly, basically immediately, we got hit with a ransomware attack, all of our data is gone. And they're working on trying to figure it out. A ransomware attack is basically somebody gaining access to their network, locking all of their data in an encrypted format that can't be read, and then
sometimes stealing it beforehand.
Usually stealing it beforehand, so they'd probably have address information, usernames, passwords, things like that of people who logged into city services. How much water you used? God forbid. And they lock this down, and they're probably being held ransom for. It may have been reported by the time this comes out for some amount of money. You know, $20 million, and we'll unencrypt all your data, and the city can get back to normal use. And this is notable because it's the first time I'm aware of where an entire city is affected by a government organization, and the government now has to make a decision that, you know, this local government has to decide, are we going to pay the ransom and let our city get back to normal operating procedure, or are we going to try something else? So I'm hoping to follow up on this next week, but it highlights the importance of those passwords and making sure they don't get leaked, because I wouldn't be surprised if that's how this all went down. So hopefully I'll have an update for you on that next week, and we will see you next Tuesday.
Later.
This conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye.
I'll be back.
Goodbye, old friend. May the force be with you.
Goodbye.